Do you like staring at impossibly well-groomed people in half-hearted sword and sandal cosplay? No, you don't? Then there's no reason for you to watch The Scorpion King, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name is Sean Collier. I am here with, I don't know, I already forget Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Two ragtag detectives on their way to fight crime in another state that's not their jurisdiction.
Thank you.
I'm Camila.
Thanks. Well done.
Thanks for handling that one. That was Camila Adams.
Hello.
And here's Robin Hitchcock.
Hi, that's me.
Hey, I want to apologize to the two of you for making it seem like this movie might be fun. Here's what happened.
Yeah, let's talk. We have to talk about this.
Talk it out.
I had memories which I thought were of The Scorpion King and were in fact all of The Mummy Returns. Like everything I said last week, including describing me going to see it, individual moments, those are all things from The Mummy Returns.
Okay.
Which is probably an okay
and
movie.
Specifically, you mentioning the worst CGI of all time, and I knew what you meant. I remember seeing that clip in like compilation videos on YouTube of bad CGI, and I was waiting for it the whole time. And Colin was watching Scorpion King with me. Little bad CGI moments would happen, and he'd be like, "Oh yeah, Sean's right. This is terrible." And I kept saying, "No, it gets worse." Waiting for half scorpion, half rock creature, which never comes. He never scorps out.
He doesn't scorp.
Yeah,
out.
It in The Mummy Returns later, he turns into a half scorpion, half himself, but he has a full human face, which looks like Super Mario 64, but we're supposed to take as, you know, convincing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's still the same human being face we've been looking at. That's what I was talking about. Not here at all. There's still some bad CGI.
Oof.
Like that fight with all of the snakes. Like, those were really goofy-looking snakes.
Anytime fire was involved, that was also, like, really... This might as well just be a curtain. Like, a fire curtain.
There was... Wasn't there an actual curtain on fire? Didn't
yes.
he cut through... Okay, because I was like, did he just cut through fire? And then I was like, oh, wait, it's something that's on fire.
I tell you, the first 4 minutes of this movie really set the tone. It's like, oh, this is what I'm getting into. Gotcha.
Thank you also for pointing out how impossibly groomed they are.
Like, right?
They start out with the men are dirty and the women look perfectly waxed and made up as though it is the 21st century, but like their hair's a little mussed.
Mm-hmm.
But then once The Rock is involved, everybody's very clean. We have to talk also, though, about how bad his wig is.
Ugh.
Like,
it is, but like,
has he been bald the entire time he's been famous?
Baldish, I guess. It's always been a very close cut.
Yeah, like in the late 90s, he would have, you know, a little bit of hair on top with that, okay, like, clean sculpting around the sides. But yeah, like, at a certain point in this movie, I was like, he would have to be, he's going to the barbershop every day.
Right.
Yeah.
In ancient, I don't even know where we are.
Like, right. His eyebrows are perfectly shaped.
Good point. Where does this take place?
I have no
Where
idea. I kept trying to figure out because you've got like 8 different accents like going and all going throughout the way, and like The Rock doesn't even try. He's like, you know what? I know what my limits are, and doing accents is it. But his brother has an accent. So
I think that they kind of tried to do like race blind, like the London stage casting, which great. Okay, but it also made every white person feel fully not necessary. I mean, more so than usual. But it was kind of like, what are you doing here? Why are you in this, Peter Facinelli?
Right, that like, he was like my biggest one. I was like, this his character serves no purpose whatsoever. He's just
fully no purpose.
Hanging around, eating and drinking this dude's shit. He is a mooch. This is an ancient mooch.
So like, maybe that was going on. Or maybe that was meant to be like tribes came in from all over, you know?
If you asked me to guess which modern day country most of this movie takes place in, I might be 5,000 miles off. Right. Like my closest guess is the Arabian Peninsula, and I'm not confident in that.
I'm going to guess Egypt just because they said in the time before the pyramids.
Mm.
Okay, maybe.
Sure. I was getting a lot of like the Arab type vibes, just mostly because the scene in the marketplace just reminded me of the scene in the marketplace in Aladdin. Like sugar dates and plums. That's kind of what I was already thinking.
The Hollywood version of an Arab marketplace.
Right. And Dan was like,
I've never seen in real life, so I have no idea how accurate it is.
I don't know. Dan was like, oh, you know, speaking of the pyramids, thinking that he saw a pyramid on the screen, it's like, no, it's a tent.
We are giving this way too much thought already.
Right. They did not. And to pay off. So all I can say is I had definitely never seen this before because I would have remembered just what a confusing, useless mess it is.
This came out after The Mummy Returns, right?
Yes.
So we had, I know it's embarrassingly bad, but the world had seen Half Scorpion, Half Rock. And then they said, come see a movie about half scorpion, half rock, and he never becomes a half scorpion?
All of that stuff happened. I think all of that stuff happens thousands of years later in the mythology of this series. Like, at some point in between, the Faxi segment deals with this a little bit, but like, this takes place thousands of years before the events of not only the mummy, but the events of ancient Egypt. And this guy, Matthias, who eventually becomes immortal because reasons, then eventually gets scorpion powers, which plays into the plot of Mummy Returns. But this is meant as like kind of the origin for that guy. Like, I think it was just that they had the Rock and the Rock was really hot and like was waiting to break out, so they were like, he gets a movie, whatever.
Okay, why don't we do our segments? What you mentioned, the Faxi segment, let's recap this and Faxi it up and try to figure it out from there
and try to make sense of oh boy. The hardest part of that job belongs to Camila, who has to attempt to summarize this movie in 60 seconds, which is either not nearly enough time or way more than is necessary.
Right. Camila, are you ready?
Yes.
Go.
There's a dude named Nimrod who has a sorceress who tells him how the battles are going to play out so he never loses. King Farron is supposed to fight him but is mad scared. The Rock is some sort of assassin named Matthias. Matthias and his boys are like, we'll kill the sorceress. Well, King Farron's son, Peter Facinelli, is a bitch and sells him out. Matthias gets caught, gets left to die by fire ants. Some squirrely dude saves his life and now plans to follow him around on his adventures. Matthias goes back to kill num-nums but makes friends with a thief child and chooses to save his life, thus missing his shot to kill nincompoop. Matthias steals the sorceress. Ninny's army finds him, but Matthias uses a sandstorm to his advantage to defeat them. Matthias gets sick, the sorceress heals him because he's the only one to save the people or something. The group stumbles upon Balthazar's secret garden, so clearly they must die. There's a fight because Matthias now wants to protect the sorceress. Matthias and Balth are like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, so let's be cool and kick it. The sorceress tells the future that Minnie the Moocher is going to kill everyone, and no shocker, Matthias and the sorceress bone because they're all in love now and junk. They go back, Trojan horse the dude, their swords, snakes, and fire. Matthias takes an arrow to the back, but then takes it out to kill Numfar. Matthias is now the Scorpion King. Oh, and gunpowder is invented.
Just under the wire.
Right on time.
That was awesome. Also gunpowder. What a weird subplot.
Right?
Also, like, growing up in the 80s, okay, when, like, you know, Western culture's the most important indoctrination was completely 1,000% in swing. They did say, oh, but the Chinese invented gunpowder.
Right.
And then this movie comes along and is like,
no.
Nope.
actually, it's this guy who got some crazy powder, some crazy sand from some Chinese people, and right. then did what he was supposed to do and added salt.
And did The Rock invent telescopes in this movie? Like, he takes out a fucking cardboard tube and puts a Bath and Body Works crystal in it and can see far.
Right. He takes out his used paper towel. Good thing I used the last paper towel roll out. Because I was like, is that a paper towel roll?
Thank you for the thorough recap. And thank you for pointing out, I don't know, street urchin. Did this movie need a short round? No. Like,
no.
One movie ever really needed a short round. And when we got to this kid, I'm like, do we need this element of additional character?
No.
I called him the Rob Schneider, which I think directly Rob Schneider's character in the first Judge Dredd movie.
Dan was calling him Fievel. Right, he's here. For no reason, no good reason.
I mean, the main thing about this movie is that it was kind of interesting to watch The Rock before he knew how to be The Rock. And I guess what I really mean is Dwayne Johnson before he knew how to be Dwayne Johnson, because he did know how to be The Rock. And a question that Colin had that I'm going to relay to you, Sean, is, was he that charming? Was he as charming as he is in 2020 when he was The Rock as a wrestler?
No, but he was considerably more charming than wrestlers. You know what I mean? Like,
was he technically a villain wrestler?
Both.
Okay.
And he could do both. He appeared.
A face is the good one. A face is the good one.
Yes, a face is a good one, and a heel. Is bad. He debuted as like a very generic, hey, I'm an athlete and I'm here to do good, and that didn't work, and everyone turned on him immediately. And that allowed him to develop this like arrogant, cocky heel character that he was so good at that it just that people just naturally started liking him. Hmm. He's probably the most charismatic wrestler about ever. And that made people go, oh, this guy can definitely do movies. More accurately, like his first SNL hosting gig, which was maybe about 2 years before this.
Which I remember. Oh, wow. I remember watching that and being blown away. Like, I can't remember any specific sketches, but I was like, oh, this guy is really handsome and charming.
That got people to buy in on him. He hadn't figured out yet exactly how to take that kind of charisma, which is very performative and theatrical and is for playing to a crowd, and turn it into movie charisma. He certainly got there, but
it's fascinating watching how bad he is in this movie. Like, I did not know he could be that bad.
you're seeing like the level that stands between good at acting for a wrestler, so you get to act, but that doesn't make your... I mean, Roddy Piper is the other one. Like, Roddy Piper had a similarly easy transition. But like, you know, the only reason that people like John Cena and Dave Bautista could have started to get there is because their first roles were supposed to be wooden and awkward.
Mm. Right.
And we're in supporting capacities, whereas The Rock kind of just got thrown into like, and you're a leading man now. You know?
Right. I like that you said performative and theatrical, because his face does too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of it, I was like, relax your face, buddy. Like, this is not the opera, you know? Like, there's a camera 6 inches away.
And it might be part of the faculty segment, but I think that it was agreed upon that he would only do the eyebrow once.
Right. That he would do the eyebrow once, and that was the only, like, explicit wrestling nod. Right.
Okay.
That's not in the faxy segment, but here's everything that is. The Scorpion King was released April 19th, 2002. It was the 12th number one film of that year, won the weekend with $36 million. The runner-up was Changing Lanes in its second weekend. Another debut was in third, Sandra Bullock in Murder by Numbers, which opened with $9.3 million. Camila is excited about Murder by Numbers.
I love that movie.
That's what started your Gosling love, right?
And also Michael Pitt.
This was also the opening weekend of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It just wouldn't be a big deal for several months after that. That was the whole thing with My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It opened as like, here's an indie romance, and like just kind of kept getting more and more popular on word of mouth. It opened this weekend in 20th, in very limited release with like $500,000. My Big Fat Greek Wedding remains the second highest grossing movie never to hit number one, behind only the forgotten 2016 cartoon Sing, which somehow took that title.
Because you got to take your kids to the movies to not go insane.
Right. My Big Fat Greek Wedding eventually spent 3 weeks at number two in September. Scorpion King somehow won another weekend, finishing first. The following weekend, Changing Lanes was still second. Jason X debuted in third. Life or Something Like It debuted in fifth. Scorpion King fell to second. In its third weekend, it earned $9 million behind the debuting Spider-Man. That was right. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, which made $114 million. It was the first time a movie ever made $100 million in 3 days.
So one thing I was going to say is that, just real quick, because I just heard my voice echoing, we have a new recording setup. We have a new recording setup almost every week. Thank you for bearing with us. It's a pandemic. Anyway.
We're trying to get better.
Yes.
Yeah. April is now, in a normal year, the summer movie season.
Right.
April was not the summer movie season in 2002. And Spider-Man coming out in May was considered a gamble. People thought that that was coming out too early.
Hmm.
And the fact that Spider-Man was such a huge hit on May 3rd weekend kind of shifted the whole calendar until the present.
Huh.
So that's why, you know, if reality ever returns, like, now, something will try to sneak in on, like, March 28th and be like, here's a summer blockbuster.
So that is why The Scorpion King was able to be a two-week winner, is because April used to be a dead zone, the way that only January is now.
Right.
And it got to be the runner-up. Hey, Spider and Scorpion. It was an all-arachnid top two. Scorpion King went on to make a little over $91 million. It was 30th for the year. It followed, to get into the franchise, The Mummy came out in 1999, made $155 million. That was 8th that year. The Mummy Returns actually made more money, significantly more, and earned $202 million in 2001. It was 6th for that year. Scorpion King is a spin-off of The Mummy Returns. There is a third Mummy movie that nobody remembers.
Is it the one with Jet Li?
Yeah, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Goodness gracious.
Came out in 2008, made $102 million. So Tomb of the Dragon Emperor definitely like stopped that series. Still, it made more than The Scorpion King. All of these made more than The Scorpion King. Which somehow didn't stop Scorpion King from getting four direct-to-DVD sequels.
How did this happen?
Is The Rock in all of them?
No, The Rock is in none of them. There, in five movies, there are four different Matthiases. Like, one guy, I don't even know their names because, like, I looked at their names and then I clicked on them to see if any of them are the guy from something, and they're not. They're just four, they're The Rock and then three random guys. Not only do none of the actors return from the actual movie, none of the characters even return. Like, it's Matthias and a bunch of new people in every one of those five movies.
Oh my God.
Does he scorp out in those movies?
I did not Google the phrase scorp out, but I certainly will now. They were Rise of a Warrior in 2008, Battle for Redemption in 2012, Quest for Power in 15, and Book of Souls in 18. So, like, that was 2 years ago. This might still be a thing. Like, we might not be done with this run yet.
I just don't understand. And do we still have straight-to-DVD movies? Does that still happen?
I mean, they're straight-to-streaming now, but, right. But yes.
I mean, yes, that's all we have right now.
Right.
Right.
I'm definitely not watching any of those, but if I do, it'll be the fourth one because it has Barry Bostwick, Lou Ferrigno, and Rutger Hauer.
What?
Wow, yeah. R.I.P.
Which one? Rutger?
At least Rutger.
I'm pretty sure Barry's Rutger. Still alive.
That's what made me say that. I think that the other... Is Lou Ferrigno still with us?
No?
Probably. Hey, Google, is Lou Ferrigno alive?
He is? Okay. Sorry, Lou. Yes. Randomly, Lou's son follows me on Twitter. One day I got... I'm like, who? What? Really?
So... Barry Bostwick, Lou Ferrigno, still with us as of this recording on July 14th. Tony,
Knock on wood.
Don't make a liar out of
it. I had a lovely interview with Barry Bostwick once. That was a very exciting day for me. Oh, of note, The Scorpion King is a prequel to a sequel to a remake. The Mummy is a remake of The Mummy.
Right.
Making this a prequel to a sequel to a remake. The second Scorpion King, Rise of a Warrior, is a prequel to this movie. So that movie is a prequel to a prequel to a sequel of a remake.
Stop it. Origin story.
It's bullshit. That's what it is. This is, I can't believe so many of them got made. And somewhere out there, there are super fans, I'm sure.
One rich dude out there just bankrolling these. If he's just like, I need more Scorpion King content.
Before we end the Faxy segment, I am not going to let the opportunity for wrestling facts pass.
Clearly.
The Rock is an 8-time WWE champion, a 2-time Intercontinental champion, a 5-time tag team champion, 3 times with Mankind and 1 time each with The Undertaker and Chris Jericho, and won 1 Royal Rumble in the year 2000. That is all despite the fact that his wrestling career is pretty short. He debuted with the then WWF November 17th of 1996. He stopped being a full-time wrestler in August of 2002, basically with the success of The Scorpion King. As soon as he, you know, was into I can lead a movie, he was pretty much done. He's returned for a little while a few times, including he won the last of those WWE championship reigns began in January of 2013. He had a little appearance then, more than 10 years after he was done full time. But he has only wrestled 14 matches since 2002. And most of those were a brief run in 2003. For all that he's the wrestler that made it, that's because he spent much more time as an actor than he ever did as a wrestler, officially announcing that he was retired from wrestling in August of 2019. Even then, he hadn't wrestled in a little over 2 years. That was because around that time each year, everyone starts wondering if he's going to do a match at WrestleMania, which he did in 2012 and 2013. He kind of did a match in like 2016. He finally got to the point where he's not old, but he's older. And the way that he builds himself now, like for movies, is not actually good for wrestling. Now that he's like a solid wall of muscle, like in one of those return matches, one of those return WrestleManias, he like tore muscles off of his bone because he's built for showing off in movies, not for actually wrestling. Ooh. So he is now officially retired.
It looks like he had like a pretty decent, like it was a slow ramp up for him. It was like after the Scorpion King, it was the rundown, which, you know, whatever. And then Walking Tall and then Be Cool, which is probably one of my favorite performances from him. But he just like kept going, just like every year after that there was just more and more and more. So
he's a good agent.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's got great representation and he's been doing what he's supposed to be doing. I'm assuming he got some acting lessons or whatnot, for some coaching.
For sure. And thank goodness, because I actually like, I think we talked about this a little bit when we did the what was that Mark Wahlberg movie,
Pain and Gain.
I do think that he can actually act a little bit right now. So if I had only ever seen The Scorpion King, I would think that this guy was blowing the worst. Somebody.
Right, yeah.
Like, don't watch this movie. If you're listening to this episode, do not waste your time with this movie.
Oh, definitely not.
No.
But I also feel like you might be imagining The Rock doing bad acting in The Scorpion King. It's worse than you think. It was unrecognizably not charismatic.
No.
The Rock.
Like where he makes a little aw dang face because his brother just got murdered in front of him?
Right?
Yes.
It probably took me like a good long time before that was actually his brother. Okay, so why do we not react properly? It's just like, oh.
Because of man feelings.
Now I'm going to have to find a new ride.
I do have to say, I think that I would have enjoyed this movie more if I were less straight, because Kelly Hu is like the most beautiful person I've ever seen.
Yeah, totally.
And she's mostly naked for most of the movie.
Yeah.
And so, like, I kept being like, well, that's the most beautiful person I've ever seen, mostly naked, but then being tragically a straight woman and not getting to appreciate it as much as I should. Like, I feel like a lot of this movie banks on you wanting to bang her.
A lot of this movie banks on you just being horny for the old times. Yeah. Like, they've turned the normal costumes of this thing into bizarre fetish wear even more than normal. Like, they always are. But, like, if you look at, like, Troy, you know, there's a lot of skin there, but it's not like, you're wearing some weird stripper clothes.
Right. Like that's going to pull off with Velcro. And there was a scene, there was a fight scene where The Rock has, like, his leather on or whatever, and then it just gets, like, chopped away slowly until he's got nothing but his boobs. Like, his man breasts are out there. Like, oh, my God.
Also, you know, like, the tough guy with his arm in a sling at the end of a movie? They have that trope here, but the sling is just literally a strap of leather.
There's so much secondhand embarrassment, first in the harem scene and then in the bathing scene. It's just, it's cringy and awkward, and it's such, like, it keeps hitting these weird, like very antiquated male fantasy. And the thing where, like, the sorceress doesn't have powers anymore because she's diminished after she's no longer a virgin. Ugh.
That's what I, okay. Did I miss that at the beginning? Was there something that was, that they said something about it before all this happened?
The evil king says, you'll be my queen. And Mr. she's Schuster. Like, well, you're only powerful because of my ability to tell the future. And if we have sex, I won't be able to tell the future anymore. And he says, I'll be so powerful, I won't need that anymore. And I can have you how I really want you.
Gotcha.
Which wow, is
it's
awful.
It's terrible. It's a major plot point that I somehow missed. I don't
know. Because this movie is dumb and does not deserve your full attention.
But then it goes way, like, and then it tries so hard in random spots. That proceeds. He doesn't trust her anymore. He thinks that maybe she had sex with Matthias. So he sets up a let's make a deal snake guessing game.
I know. My whole thing was like, how long before all this did you get those dudes to go grab some snakes? Like, set up the urns.
And build the Lazy Susan of snake pot.
It's like, this seems like this is something that should have taken a little bit longer than just the 30 seconds for you to bring them on in.
Colin also made the observation that one of those guys, he was like, that person is not attractive. They must be a snake handler. Like, that's how they got in front of the camera. That's their expertise.
This guy is for
were
real.
Were any of those snakes actually in the room? I felt like they were all CGI.
There was a real snake. She pulls a real snake out of the pot.
Does she?
Okay.
Yeah.
Or was she just pantomiming a CGI snake?
And before we move on from her, yes, she's gorgeous. That is a dramatic, I'm rising out of my flower bath and flipping my hair just over my breasts. Like,
yeah.
That was like, okay, I mean, yes, this works. In this 4 seconds, it works. Quick question. They keep calling her sorceress. Do they not know the word oracle, or do they think we don't know the word oracle?
She has really no good powers. Question.
Right. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, I was like, I don't think sorceress means what you guys think it means, because she's not exactly sorcering anything. She is seeing into the future. That's it. That's what she's got.
Michael Clark Duncan. Okay.
Sure.
R.I.P.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like I've seen him in heavy eye makeup in something else before. Like, this didn't seem new to me. And I know I haven't seen this movie before.
I agree with you.
Like, it seemed right, or at least familiar.
The only joyful thing, well, I was looking at the IMDb trivia. They claim that when they hit each other with the swords weren't supposed to break, and they just did, and then they rolled with it. I don't believe that.
No.
That was very cool.
It was. That was a moment.
It was
what
nice.
I do believe is there was apparently some fight scene where The Rock went a little hard and accidentally socked Michael Clark Duncan in the jaw and felt really bad about it. So because he felt bad about it, Michael Clark Duncan went and packed his cheeks with a bunch of stuff so The Rock would feel like he had swollen up his whole face.
Oh,
they were razzing the new guy.
I know. Aw, buddies.
That's so mean and funny.
I know, right? Aw.
But they bonded.
I know. Yeah. They probably were really really nice and good friends afterwards, and it was a sweet moment. Oh, only to be ruined by the travesty that is this movie. God.
Honestly, as this movie is just total garbage, like, I didn't hate it. Are we getting ready to rank it, or rate it, rather, because...
You didn't hate it?
Like, I mean, not mad that I watched it.
It's not... I mean, it's not... I don't have a bunch of anger towards it.
Right.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's close.
Truly bad.
It's very close.
It's a deeply horrible but not deeply hateable movie.
I spent like the first 20 minutes thinking that the Numrod or Num Nums, whatever his name is, that he was the that he was the Mr. Schuster from Glee. I was like, is that?
I thought he looked a little like Robin Thicke.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know. I hated it a lot. Like, I was just profoundly bored, and like I really hate. When a movie thinks it's being funny and clever and every joke is falling flat, like the appearance of humor in humorless situations bothers me for some reason. I hated it a whole lot. I mean, there are moments, and like, it's a nice slice of an era. The era when you could have a fully instrumental score, which would like go into guitar chugging butt rock for a little bit every now and then.
The fuck? But like literally, like in the first 4 minutes, I'm like, what is this movie?
Yeah.
And I think it's like, I think I read that some of it is The Rock's entrance music.
They said that his entrance music was worked in, but I didn't hear it.
Okay.
And like, I recognize that music quite clearly. So that might have been, maybe they told him to make him feel better. I don't know.
I do appreciate that it was only 90 minutes. Like, it wasn't I'm like,
real.
Thank you. You know what you are, I guess. Even though it literally could have been like 35.
Before we rate it, is the MPAA full of shit this week? Scorpion King was rated PG-13 for intense sequences of action violence. Action violence. Intense sequences of action violence and some sensuality.
Sensuality.
I think that means that Kelly, who is mostly naked for most of the movie.
Right, but I just love
the... say nudity.
Right, I love the fact, like, just the wording.
Technically, her nipples are covered.
Right. And her hoo-ha. Right. Her hoo-ha is only covered by like a triangle at most times, but
yes. Strategically placed strips of fabric.
I think this is PG-13.
I agree.
It's a little more violent than, like, it was surprisingly violent at stretches. That impaling is weirdly violent, where he like shoves one guy on a pointy rock. Like, that was way more violent than I thought. If it were a little bit bloodier, I'd be like, no, this is an R-rated movie. I think it's a PG-13.
I think it's solidly PG-13.
Same.
All right. MPAA is now right 50% of the time since we started this segment. We can rate it. I think let's climb down the ladder this week. And start with Robin.
It's possible that I oversold my inflated rating, but my inflated rating is a 28.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, I thought you were going 40s or something.
No. I'm saying, and I just double checked my previous things. Like, I gave Invasion USA a 34, and I want to say this is better than Invasion USA, but I can't give it. It cannot breach the 30s.
No, I would highly disagree about it being better than. Oh, I don't know. That sucks. Okay, damn it. All right.
They blew up a neighborhood with a bazooka. That makes it better than this movie.
There was something in Invasion USA that I did enjoy, and I can't remember what it is. It might have just been the bad guy.
Camila?
Unfortunately, I cannot really use my Invasion USA rating as a compass for how I rated this one. 36.
No, we did not. That is the highest rating, so I did not successfully climb down the ladder. Like I said, I hated it. It gained 1 point for tying a zip line to a camel, and it gained 4 points for pulling an arrow out of your own back to kill a guy with, sending him flying into an explosion that killed him a second time. That was worth 4 points. Even with those bonuses, it only got to 19 for me.
Ooh.
Give it a 19 for an average score of 27.
Mm-hmm,
27 and two-thirds is the final score for the Scorpion King. That is low on our list.
I'm glad I watched this instead of watching 50 Shades Freed again.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, sure. I don't know. It's so tough. I don't know.
Attractive human Dakota Johnson would have been naked a lot in the other movie. Like,
is she, though? Like, a lot?
Not a lot. Also, I think Kelly Hu is more attractive.
Yeah,
no, that's true.
Absolutely.
Tied for our fifth worst rating. The only movies worse than this climbing down are Twilight, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Hangover Part 2, Divergent, and Halloween. This has the exact same overall rating as Elysium. Again, it feels right. It feels right to say this is exactly the same quality of movie as Elysium.
I would watch this every day to avoid watching Elysium.
Yeah, absolutely. Do they ever say Scorpion King in this film?
I don't think so. Like, he gets bit by a scorpion, right? Or he gets stabbed with something that has scorpion venom on it, and she says, like, the blood of the scorpion will run through him forever.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the total involvement of scorpions.
I thought that somebody at the last minute said, congratulations, Scorpion King. Like, I thought that was in the last scene.
It was like some overdub, like this weird afterthought. You know what, guys? Scorpion King was never actually in the script. Somebody overdub it real quick.
Right. Once I realized that Sean was talking about Mummy 2 and that he was never going to scorp out in this one, this movie is over to me.
This movie's dead to me.
Yeah. I don't think we're adding anything to the bingo card.
I don't think so.
Because,
much of the bingo card is present-centric.
Yeah, plus, I mean, whitewashed, but we don't know where it's supposed to take place. So, I mean, I have no...
I mean...
And I don't think it really was anyway, because we've got Michael and The Rock, I'm not sure, is racially ambiguous.
I would accept that it is whitewashed because the presence of white people, period, makes no sense.
But I guess, like, the only one is really, like, Facinelli and...
There's that mid-level villain who was a...
That's Peter Facinelli.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, there was another one. There was, like, a mid-level goon that, like, chased him into the cave where the guy got impaled.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I guess, so wait, the inventor of gunpowder...
Right.
The main bad guy, that mid-level goon, and Peter Facinelli, four white people who have no business being in this story.
It was absolutely not... None of them brought anything to this... to the story of this film.
So, I feel like maybe we should be checking off whitewashed.
I mean, I feel like it's the least that the Scorpion King can do for...
No, I think you're right. If we were talking about a movie with a slightly higher, like that Exodus Gods and Kings or whatever it is, where, like, you know, there were more primary characters who were white in that, but, like, if we hit that, it would be, oh yeah, that's whitewashing. If that's whitewashing, I think this probably is.
I think I'm gonna make a decision and say yes, because it does not give me a bingo, so I'm not going to. It's not.
No, me either. Anybody?
Please name the next movie be Hackers. Does that get to number one?
Or a Mission Impossible? A tie-breaking procedure.
Right.
Oh, a longtime fan, Chris, suggested this on the Facebook page, and I agree. If two or three of us get a bingo at the same moment, he suggested that we essentially split the pot and another veto is in play, but all the winners have to turn their keys to play it.
Oh.
So if the two of you hit bingo at the same time, you each get half of an additional veto.
I like it.
Excellent suggestion. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. The Rock is half Samoan and half black, by the way.
Oh, that's thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. That's the depth of wrestling knowledge that I have. I'm like, if you're like, what race is? I'm like, I know.
Got it.
Anyway, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I have two unexpected movies to rave about. One is Smokey and the Bandit. I watched that last night.
Like the original one?
I've never seen it before. So much fun.
That movie's a delight.
Huh. I've never seen it.
It was playing at a drive-in, the double feature. I've still never made it through a double feature. It was Smokey and...
sorry to interrupt. Smokey and the Bandit is the ultimate drive-in movie. It's like, maybe Jaws, I don't know. But, like, that's such a good movie to watch outside.
No, it's such a good movie to watch outside, plus it's short. Like, the only knock on Jaws as a drive-in movie is that it's 2 hours and 8 minutes long. Smokey and the Bandit is, like, 91 minutes. It's funny. Burt Reynolds seems like the biggest movie star in the world. Like, the action is fun, wacky action. It's never, like, self-important. Jackie Gleason is amazing. It's so, it was so, I'm just, like, my heart is full because of Smokey and the Bandit.
I know, I can see in your face, like, there's a lot of, like, if you were a cartoon, there'd be hearts in your eyeballs right now.
I have, like, a 10 idea deep depth chart of like, what I'm going to do because the world is falling apart, and, like, firmly in the last rung on that ladder has always been say the hell with it and become a trucker. And I think that rose a few notches while watching Smokey and the Bandit.
New life goals.
Right? It's a good time to be a trucker, you know? Podcasts are abundant.
Right. There's no one else in there with you.
Right.
You're probably spending most of your time in places where people don't live. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
That and we watched Earth Girls Are Easy, which I had never seen, and I would watch that movie once a week for the rest of my life. Like, it's just so, one, and I don't know if, like, from this vantage point in my life, I can name a hotter on-screen couple than Geena Davis and Jeff Goldblum in that movie. Like, maybe
is that
that's
when they were together?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe that's how they got together.
Isn't that after The Fly?
Yes, that's well after The Fly.
I think then they got together for The Fly.
But maybe this is, like, you know, when you're a young person, you're talking about, like, some iconic, you know, adolescent nude scene, and when you're in your mid 30s, you're like, you know who's hot? Geena Davis. But she looks fantastic in that. And he might even look a little better. Like, this is, like, peak, I'm smoldering through the entire movie, Jeff Goldblum. But it's hilarious. Jim Carrey and Damon Wayans are great. It's the entire, I had no idea it was a musical until they started singing.
It's a musical?
Does it count as a musical?
There's, like, 4 or 5 full musical numbers.
Okay, in my memory, I can only remember one of them. So I have not seen that movie since I was a child.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many joys to rediscover. It is like a Tim Burton movie if he didn't have a creepy fetish. It is just everything is weird and colorful and imaginative. I want to watch Earth Girls Are Easy again right now.
That was just one of those movies that I saw. I saw it when I was young-ish, but it was after A League of Their Own had come out. So I knew who Geena Davis was. I knew who Jim Carrey was. So it was after, you know, Jim Carrey was famous. I knew who Damon Wayans was. It was like all of these people who I knew as famous people in this very weird, junky movie. And I was like, what happened? And my dad was like, well, most of these people weren't famous yet. And so they just said yes.
Yeah, it looks like Geena and Jeff were together from 87 to 90. So that was after The Fly.
Yeah.
That was a year after The Fly.
Never thought that would be my power couple, but
yeah.
There they are.
So I want to rave about Palm Springs. Did you watch that, Camila?
Not yet.
Did you watch it, Sean? Neither of you watched it.
Mm-mm.
Well, then we'll have to go watch it. It is... It's a time loop movie with Andy Samberg and the mother from How I Met Your Mother, the name of Kristen Bellotti, I think it is. It is the perfect quarantine movie.
Oh.
I think it's a pretty good rom-com, and it deals with the sci-fi bit in funny and clever and new ways, which is interesting. But the reason that I think that it really resonated with me, and I have seen other people say this on Twitter as well, is that being stuck in a time loop is kind of what our lives feel like right now.
Yeah.
And like the nihilism that comes with that. And there's one point in the movie where he says, she's like, oh, well, you never get to go anywhere but here. And he's like, I made it as far as Equatorial Guinea once. And it just gave me this moment of like, oh, like, yeah, we can't go anywhere. We're stuck and every day is the same. And so it really came out at exactly the right time. J.K. Simmons also,
nice.
Just a delight. I love that he did not stop being who he is because he won an Oscar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I love that he still takes the same roles, you know, that he did a part on streaming season of Veronica Mars. Like, he just, he is who he is and keeps taking the roles that he takes, and God bless him for it.
Yeah, I like him.
And then also The Old Guard with Charlize Theron on Netflix. You can hear me talk about that for a solid hour on an upcoming episode of the Theronathon, which I recorded directly before recording this. So stay tuned for that. But short answer is Charlize with an axe, 5 stars.
Nice. I look forward to watching that. Like, I'm pretty stoked about it.
Kiki Layne is also really good in it. Mm.
I'm really curious as to what's going to happen there. Because I mentioned it on the last episode, and I was like, this is good, but it thinks it's the beginning of a franchise, and I don't think it's going to be. But now it's getting such a good reaction that, like, I wonder if this isn't going to become a big thing.
I hope it does. Was that ever going to be a real movie? By real movie, I mean theatrically released.
I don't know. I don't think so. But
which feels,
it feels like it, doesn't it?
It feels weird. I guess that just Charlize Theron's involvement. And I know that I'm obsessed with her in a way that not everybody in the world is.
No, but it feels
she seems
like
too big of a star.
Right. Yeah.
And she produced it, so.
But also, like, Dark Places, that wasn't a theatrical release, was it?
I don't think it was, which she also produced.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things that she made that she wanted to be theatrical releases that weren't, like The Last Face, which is one of the worst movies ever. So I don't know. This definitely felt too big for a Netflix movie.
Mm.
I have complicated feelings about all of that.
No,
we don't have time to get into.
Netflix financed it. Netflix was on board before a cast was on board.
Oh,
right,
wow.
But like Roma is a real movie.
Is it though? No. the way they're going, like there do not appear to ever have been plans for a theatrical release.
Okay.
Like Bright, the Netflix original from before there were Netflix original that nobody remembers. Big budget action movie with Will Smith that was always intended to be a Netflix movie. I think they every now and then try to do one just like that to be like, nope, sometimes the big ones are just stars.
Mm. Okay.
It's like, we have good stuff too.
Anyway, I hope they make more.
Yeah, I watched Troop Zero, which it's cute. I mean, it's okay.
I've started it a couple of times and been like, it's
one of those, like, we're home all day with the kid. And so it's just like, you know, this seems safe. Like, we can go ahead and I can watch a movie I haven't seen before and I don't have to worry about anything super weird happening. But, you know, it was fine. And also, My Spy, which I don't think you enjoyed, Sean, but it's like, you know, Disney's version of The Professional. Like, I thought it was kind of cute.
That sold. Like, I had no intention of watching this movie, but you just convinced me that I should.
I enjoyed it. Like, I like Dave Bautista a lot.
Too.
And I find him not necessarily charming, but he's delightful. And he's, you know, and I can see now, like, I didn't know that he was a wrestler before all this, but I can see where he's taking like the same like kind of trajectory as The Rock took as far as being a serious or a respected actor. so I think, you know, I'm interested to see like where he's going like in the future, like what other projects he'll attach himself to. Cause he was also good in Hotel Artemis. I liked him in that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's not bad.
Just to drop in another wrestling story because this is the episode for it. I think I've been present for two of the nights he's most conflicted about. He was a wrestler. I met him once. I met him when I was in college. Somehow they were promoting, you know, Raw was coming from State College soon. And part of the promotion was that he, like, did a Q&A with a marketing club. Like, it was a very weird environment. But, you know, he was good there and he was very nice. He was a big deal from about, you know, the early 2000s to about the end of that decade. And then he kind of faded away, was trying to break into movies for a while. He's in one of those Scorpion King sequels.
Of course.
And finally hit with Guardians of the Galaxy. So when Guardians was coming out, he decided to go back to wrestling and kind of try to, like, build up more steam in the run-up to it. And they announced that he was going to be back and he was going to enter the Royal Rumble in 2014. That was the one in Pittsburgh. That was the first one. I've been to the last 7 Royal Rumbles. Let's see if that streak continues in 2021. But that was the first one in 2014. They built the whole night around Batista's coming. Everyone get hyped. And that crowd did not care about him at all. There was just other people who were popular at the time. Everyone was really into Daniel Bryan. Everyone wanted Daniel Bryan to come out and win the Royal Rumble unexpectedly. And the whole show was built around, nope, this hero you love, Batista, is coming out and he's going to be the big hero today. And it was a bizarre environment where 14,000 people paid to be in a building to see a certain thing. It went the other way. So the entire room just started booing. The entire crowd just started shitting on everything that was happening. And his like big hero comeback ended up with him like screaming angrily at a crowd full of people who were booing the shit out of him unexpectedly.
So you're saying it's Pittsburgh's fault?
Basically.
It's WWE's fault for reading the room very, very badly in terms of like what that crowd was going to like and want. I think also they had a really clear opportunity to make it a surprise. Like part of the thing with the Royal Rumble is you don't know exactly who's going to be in it. Mm. They eventually got way better at keeping things under wraps. If they had not said a word about him and then, oh my God, here's that guy is back again, it would have gone another way. They just kind of overhyped in the wrong direction. That being said, Pittsburgh has really bad crowds for wrestling. That's like an established thing. Yeah, it was an infamous thing of everyone hating Batista. Later, years later, I was at WrestleMania last year. He was in what was his final match. He announced his retirement immediately afterwards against Triple H. Part of the problem with WrestleMania recently is that it's way too long. Like, I think all told, that WrestleMania was 6.5 hours long.
What?
And Triple H and Batista turned up at about 11, and the crowd didn't hate it. They just sat silently because we were exhausted.
Like, bitch, we're tired. Like,
this was a full football stadium of mostly silent people. Like, no one's booing him. No one's giving him a hard time. But it's like, this is the culmination of his whole career, his final match. They're going all out. Triple H rode in on basically a Mad Max cart. It was supposed to be a big thing. And everyone's just kind of like, it is late.
It's like, I got these kids to bed. I got work in the morning. It's like, you fucking around out here, Triple H.
He's going to be fine. He's going to be a movie star. I just hijacked Camila's thoughts on my spy. So
that's pretty much it. I mean, it was cute. I chuckled. The little girl's adorable.
She was adorable.
So, yeah.
And they played off of each other well. Yeah. That was like the one thing I could.
Yeah, you totally should.
And Kristen Schaal is funny.
Oh, yeah. Yes, she's very funny. Per usual. Not a shocker.
Camila, where are you on your alphabetical DVDs?
I'm stuck still. I'm still on Death Proof. I haven't gotten past it.
And that's one of those.
But here's the problem. One, I started watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine just so, for one, I could see where that screaming guitar gif comes from. And I like found the episode and it was, you know, totally worth it. So it just kept going. Two, I also found a new television show called Very Scary People, hosted by Donnie Wahlberg. Like, so those of you, if anybody listens to my other podcasts, you might know
this
that
is made for you.
I know you might know that Donnie Wahlberg and I have been on again, off again for a couple years now. But it feels like with this show where he's talking about serial killers and how and folks that caught him, he's trying to woo me back. So,
like, dear Camila,
where is this show on?
It's on HLN. Which I don't even know. Like,
the news channel that I thought didn't exist anymore until this moment?
Yes!
HLN?
And apparently there's a full-ass season last year. So what I saw was a promotion of season 2, which had started this month. And I was like, there's a whole nother season that I didn't know about? So yes, that's what I've been doing.
I definitely thought that HLN barely ever existed and certainly didn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I think if somebody had said something about an HLN network, I would assume it was some sort of like gardening channel or something.
Okay. I just thought it had to have become something else, like Court TV. Like, we all still have Court TV, but it's something way different now.
It's called True TV.
Oh,
Court TV became True TV, right? Yeah.
I don't know if that exists. We still have cable because Colin watches CNN every morning and I want to be able to watch live TV sometimes. And that's an affordable solution to that problem.
Right.
But I hardly ever turn the TV on. I'm very much a streaming person.
True TV definitely still exists because it shows Impractical Jokers 21 hours a day. and Mary Beth is obsessed with Impractical Jokers. Impractical Jokers is one of the most bizarre cultural.
What is that?
That is a hidden camera show, mostly a hidden camera show, but with four stars, where most of the show will be that, like, they have to go into a place and do something ridiculous and try to succeed. Like, the only recurring sketch I genuinely like is they're sent, they have to go into a waiting room and they are calling names for people that are with, but all of the names are absurd and they have to do it with a straight face. And this came up recently because when we were recording last week, she sent me a GIF where one of the fake names was Beverly Hills Cop 2. Anyway, this show, either you don't get it at all or you think it's the funniest thing in the world. There's an Impractical Jokers cruise. They tour and they play arenas with what is basically like showing clips from the show and narrating. Yes. And like, we're not the only couple like this. Like, my friends Dana and Ariella. Ariella thinks it's the funniest thing ever and shows clips of it to Dana. And Dana's like, And that's the reaction I have. It's some weird formula where either this does nothing for you or it's the funniest thing you've ever seen.
Oh my God.
Has she ever watched Just for Laughs?
No.
Just for Laughs is a Canadian comedy empire. Like, I think it's, I don't know if they have cruises, but like, it's a huge thing. And it's hidden camera comedy, but because it's Canadian, it has it's not in English or in French. It just is. They play wacky music and it all of the humor can be portrayed without language.
That sounds good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. Other than the name, the names up, like, one of them was Mary Beth Beth Beth. The one that I lost my shit at was Melt Gibson.
Oh my goodness.
It's like,
that is funny.
Sketch is great. But a lot of them are built around like being in a supermarket and you have to like slip things into people's pockets and stuff. It's like uncomfortable in a way that like I just feel weird afterwards.
That's how I feel about that stuff.
Yeah.
I ended up watching a lot of Just for Laughs when I lived in South Africa because it was on the television.
This isn't even the podcast anymore. We're just talking about things.
I might cut this. Anyway, we got to draw a movie.
Yeah, we should draw a movie. What's the status right now? The only veto in play belongs to Camila, right?
Yes, correct.
All right.
Number is 191.
Don't make me use my veto, Tony.
For you to use it, you would have to know what this movie is, and I certainly don't. 191 is CB4.
Oh, with Chris Rock.
Okay, from the year 1993. I have no idea.
Chris Rock had a number one movie in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Was he like in it, or was he like the star?
He was the star.
Holy cow!
It's kind of like
CB4 is a 1993 American comedy film directed by Tamara Davis and starring Chris Rock. Follows a fictional rap group.
I'm fully on board.
Parodies NWA, taking inspiration from This Is Spinal Tap.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Fear of a Black Hat.
Correct.
This was the number one movie?
You keep saying.
Yeah,
93. I remember it being a big deal. You got to understand, we'll get into it. I'm not going to veto it. I'm
going to go ahead. No, I'd be mad at you if you did.
Oh, there's probably also, like, I'm sure, Juice and Boys in the Hood. And, we'll get into it.
Oh, I'm excited to talk about this.
I never wrote those three letters.
Although not, just to put it out there, I'm not trying to equate the theatrical and the cinematic genius that is Juice and Boys in the Hood to CB4. And I'm not even 100% sure I've seen this all the way through.
We'll certainly find out. Yeah, it was number one March 12th to the 14th of 93. It won a number one movie in America by a margin of $6,000 over Fire in the Sky, which made basically the exact same amount of money.
I don't even know what that
Fear
is.
Fear of the Black Cat also came out in 93. They, Volcano and Dante's Peaked, Hip Hop Spinal Tap.
You know, a lot of times how movies, they seem like, like there's a theme. There's definitely a theme this summer.
I've never heard of this movie. A Fear of a Black Hat, I love that movie. Like, I think that movie is brilliant.
All right.
It's on HBO Max.
Sweet.
Hey, CB4 is on HBO Max?
That's what Just Watch says.
Fantastic. Fear of a Black Hat's on Tubi. So, double feature.
Anytime I'm confused, that also means I'm excited.
Me too.
Anytime I'm like, what is teachers? What? The Scorpion King was released April 19th of 2002. What was the number one song in America the weekend that The Rock first climbed to the top of the box office?
Christina Aguilera.
No.
Missy Elliott.
No. Camila is a step closer. We are in the R&B realm, not in the pop realm.
Ashanti?
Correct. What is the hit?
Foolish?
Yeah, that's Foolish.
It is Foolish by Ashanti. I don't remember that song, so
it's
I can't.
Good song.
Yeah, it's not very many.
I feel like I say that like unless it's Eagles and I'm like, ugh, they're lame. Whenever it's just a pop song, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good song. I like pop music. What can I say?
Same.
It was a very similar summer. Wait, look at this. We only wanted to hear one thing that year. For 5 weeks, You Got It Bad by Usher. For 2 weeks, Always on Time by Ja Rule featuring Ashanti. For 7 weeks, Ain't It Funny by Jennifer Lopez featuring Ja Rule. For 10 weeks, Foolish by Ashanti, and then Hot in Here by Nelly. Like,
wow.
We wanted our songs to change this much.
This is radio. He was moving his fingers a little bit.
That's true.
Number one movie in America.
What? The episode's not over? No, it's me, Robin Hitchcock. I wanted to quickly let you know that once again, we have our rare opportunity to do a guest spot on the number one movie in America in support of Arcade Comedy Theater here in Pittsburgh, a nonprofit comedy theater which has been closed since March. So more than ever, we need your support. If you want to bid on the opportunity to guest on our show, please visit 32auctions.com/arcade2020. That is the number 3, the number 2, auctions.com/arcade2020. Search for the number one movie in America, and you can bid on an opportunity to not only appear on this show, but choose the movie from our list of all the number one movies in America that we are going to talk about. Thank you. We look forward to recording with you.